Hello, this is Carrie Weber, Managing Editor of America Magazine. We're here today with Sister Joan Dauber, who is the Executive Director of Lifeway Network. Lifeway Network is a nonprofit organization that works as part of a coalition in New York City to combat human trafficking through the provision of safe housing and education. She lives in community with survivors of human trafficking and with women religious from other congregations. Sister Joan, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
I wonder if we could start out with a little bit of an overview. If you could tell me a little bit about what Lifeway Network does.
Lifeway Network was founded in 2007. It's a 501c3 organization. And actually, I founded it. So it didn't exist before 2007. And actually, I had started work on human trafficking in around about 2006 and wanting really to provide safe housing for women survivors of human trafficking, women who had suffered the awful experience of being trafficked, who'd been stripped of their identity and their personhood in many ways. So that was my hope. And, well, at that time, I had gone to a meeting in Baltimore that was run by MRS, the Migration and Refugee Service of USCCB. And several of us from all over the country had gathered there to talk about the issue of human trafficking and what we might do about it. At that time, I met five people from the New York area. And by September of that year, we had come together and formed the Coalition of Religious Congregations to Stop Trafficking in Persons. It's a New York coalition. I was working in parish ministry. My background is in theology, and I was a pastoral associate. And it was really through the USIG meeting in 2001 that I really got involved in this. And it was kind of in me, and I was thinking about it. And then when this whole meeting came about, I then asked my congregation if I could step aside from parish ministry and focus full time on human trafficking. And I received that permission. And so in 2006, I actually began the work in a small room with a computer. So now we have a safe house, and we have an education program, and the safe house houses five women who've been trafficked for a year, and the education program really works to bring awareness to the general public, and in particular to high school students, with the assistance of students from colleges to kind of work together on that.
Very good. Now, I wonder if you could tell me more about what exactly human trafficking is, and it helped to define it for people who might not be familiar with really what it involves.
Human trafficking. It's what we call it today is modern day slavery. So if you think about how individuals were taken against their will, were used as commodities, were sold as commodities, that's really what is happening in the experience of human trafficking. Individuals are tricked by all kinds of ploys, either through an individual preying on people who are vulnerable. So unlike slavery in the past, it's not along racial lines anymore. It's really around the vulnerable population. So anybody who is vulnerable is really susceptible to being trafficked. That's why we are spending so much time on young people as a preventative experience in terms of trafficking. So the signs of human trafficking would be a person who is afraid, maybe who doesn't speak the language and has somebody speak for them, a person who maybe has moved several times, someone is speaking on their behalf when you're in conversation with them, maybe there's no eye contact, there is maybe signs of bruising. Often, though, victims of human trafficking are just hidden in plain sight. So you may think that your maid in your room or the waiter or the woman who is at the massage parlor all have legit jobs. But in some cases, that's not so. Mm. So to actually identify victims of trafficking is a difficult thing. We have looked at trafficking in New York, particularly Lifeway Network. We joined with Hofstra University and did a research project, and we discovered that over 11,000 trafficked victims were being interacted with through social service agencies here in New York City in a given time. One of the ways in which people talk about the statistics of human trafficking as well, coming into the United States, it would be around about 14 to 18,000 people a year, and globally is 27 million, 22 to 27 million. Now, people dispute some of those figures, but one thing they do agree on, they're all underestimated. So it's a huge problem.
Yeah, I think the scale of it might be surprising to some people who would imagine that in the United States, slavery is a thing of the past. It's something that we've done away with, and that's something that,
absolutely,
you know, we have worked to overcome, but it exists in different forms.
Yeah, as well, when people hear about human trafficking, they think, oh yes, it's overseas, it's in that country, it's way over there, it's not here. And really and truly, it's in every state of the United States, and particularly prevalent in places like New York City, Texas, Florida. So yeah, it's very prevalent in the United States. And those figures that I gave you, they would be foreign-born trafficked persons being trafficked into the United States. There is a much larger number of domestic persons who are being trafficked inside the United States. When we talk about trafficking, it doesn't mean that you've crossed a border. It really deals with how you have been treated, what has happened to you, what has been your experience. Any person under the age of 18 who is forced into some kind of sexual act is immediately considered trafficked if you're under the age of 18. And that's the law of New York City as well as the federal law.
Is human trafficking being fueled by sex industries and by prostitution in the United States and abroad? Or is there a variety of jobs or actions that they are sort of being forced into through this trafficking?
Trafficking mainly is seen in many cases as sex trafficking, but it's not only sex trafficking. Labor trafficking, in fact, is a huge area of trafficked persons. In fact, it can be more than the sex trafficking. There's trafficking for human organs, there's all kinds of different trafficking, but the ones that we have focused on in Lifeway Network have been the women particularly who have been trafficked either for labor trafficking or sex trafficking. There is a whole question about the demand side of human trafficking, and it can be demand side in terms of sex trafficking would be the demand for sex particularly, and that can be exacerbated at different times depending on what is happening in the culture. And then, you know, we just take for granted that we can get cheap clothing, that we can get cheap shoes, that we have our coffee. So I think that the labor trafficking is another huge piece, and the demand is our demand for certain items and certain things at a certain price. So there's demand on both sides of the issue, both sex and labor trafficking.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you reach out to survivors? You mentioned that they're very difficult to identify. How do you go about reaching out and identifying people and developing a sense of trust?
Mm-hmm. And that word trust is very important when we speak about victims of human trafficking, because it's totally been eradicated and violated. With Lifeway Network, what we did was we began to partner with social service agencies here in New York City, such as Safe Horizons, Sanctuary for Families, New York Asian Women's Center. So we have memorandums of understanding with these. And what happens is when there is a raid or a person is found by the law enforcement and brought to the service provider for assistance and help, then our house is a house that is then looked at as a possible house for this individual. And we provide the safe housing and some services within the house itself. And we also partner and depend on the service providers to provide the case management for the women in the house and to refer them to the different services that they need. And then we support that and support that happening. Our house is a little different, I think, than shelters. Our house is staffed by three women religious who, from different congregations, came together purposefully to create an intentional community to live with victims, women survivors of human trafficking. And that took us quite a while through a whole discernment process to kind of come to the place where it was these three particular women who made that decision. We have a house manager we employ full-time who works in the house. And then we have a part-time social worker who also works in the house. So it's a really strong community sense of being with the women. Rather than it being like a boarding house kind of thing where they just go out to see their case managers and their lawyers and their have their doctor's appointment. There is somebody at the end of the day who wants to know, how are you doing? Is everything okay? What was your day like? Without being intrusive, without asking questions about their trafficking situation, only when the women themselves divulge that do we listen to that and are aware of that and work with them. But we have about 25 other women religious who are volunteers in the house. So it's a great group of people.
Well, I think it really speaks to the kind of innovation and collaboration that's sort of happening now with women religious and among different congregations. And this idea of religious and lay working together as well and living together in a sense through your community.
Yes, yes. It really is. One of the things I'm really delighted about is the coalition and the support that that has provided to the Safe House. You ask any member of the coalition, they say it's our house, you know. So they really take ownership in the Safe House, even though it is run by Lifeway Network, which we founded. But they indeed provided resources in both financial resources as well as the sisters themselves. So yeah, it's a wonderful model.
What do you think is one of the greatest needs of survivors of human trafficking when they are sort of coming out of that experience? I think some of the things you've mentioned, that the housing and that community would really be beneficial. Are there other things that you are able to provide and that are lacking?
Yeah, so I think the real greatest need is the safety factor. Before you have that safety factor, nothing else seems to make sense. They're not comfortable to try anything else. So it depends. It depends on the woman themselves, where they are, how long their trafficking situation has been, how long they've been out of the trafficking situation. So each of them would always need, first of all, the safe space, the safe housing. And that's the biggest need in New York City and in other large cities. Then the other thing is, what about language? If they've come from another country, what about the language skills? How do they negotiate being in the United States? So learning ESL, having those opportunities to begin to learn the language. In the house, most all the time, English is spoken, so that is a helpful thing. The main thing, I think, in the end, is that the women want to be able to work and want to be independent. And all we do is try to help them to begin to achieve that goal. And so it would be, is their health good? What has happened to them in this situation? To make sure that they have good health care when they need it. The other thing would be, what about education? What's the level of education? What do they need to do? Some of our women are at school already and doing well. One is doing a GED program. Another is doing training to become a nurse's aide, and another is also doing something around the healthcare. You know, if they don't have their immigration status, in our case, women from foreign-born women, then that's a big thing that needs to be taken care of. So that's a real need to have a lawyer to assist with that. And then to prosecute the traffickers, and how do they do that, and how do they work with law enforcement and legal assistance to do that. So all those things are huge. Not one of those things is small. You know, if any of us were doing all of those things at the same time, it's just huge. It's just huge. For if you draw a little diagram, you put the trafficked person in the middle, and then all these spokes coming out are all the services that are being provided to that one person in order to bring that person back to who they were, create safety and trust, and have them know clearly how precious they are as a human person. All of that is necessary.
Can you share any memories or experiences that you have had in interacting with survivors of human trafficking and interacting with people at the house, something that has really touched you where one of these women has made a difference in your life or your perspective?
It's amazing. They have, each one of them in different ways, has such resilience. You know, when you think about a woman having to sit in a corner to eat on the floor, never sat at a table, but was told that she could not and was made to sit in a corner. When they're at the table having conversations and laughing, and that they've had to overcome a whole lot to do that. And one of the things we want to do is provide that kind of support. One of the women said to me recently, living here with this group is like living at home with my mother. So it was, for me, I mean, for young women, that's a very important thing to be able to say. One other woman has said recently, being here, I can sleep deeply. I can sleep. So when they say something like that, then you know, I mean, what is it like to be in your own bedroom, to have your own time to sleep, and not feel that somebody is going to violate that at some point that you don't know at any given time. So for her to say that I can sleep deeply is really a wonderful thing.
Now, what can a person who does maybe not have a law degree, who is not a police officer, who is not living at your house, what can they do to prevent this crime and this affront to human dignity?
I think it's to not take it for granted that somebody else is doing something about it, but that we are all responsible for this experience of these other women, at times it's men, but we deal with women in our house. I think it's so important to become educated around the issue of human trafficking, to learn about it. There are so many websites out there. One in particular I would recommend is Polaris Project. Polaris Project has stories of women. It has ways in which you can receive training, and it runs the National Resource Center, which is the hotline for human trafficking. And I would just ask people to commit to memory that hotline number, because, you know, you go into a nail salon, you see women who can't talk your language, they are not making eye contact, there's somebody supervising them. So maybe this is something, but you don't know and we're not sure. So I would just recommend that number be called. It's 1-888-373-7888. And you know, that's a number you can just remember. You don't have to write it down. And when I give talks, I make people learn it. Because I think you need to know it. You need to know what you can do. And it's not just a hotline. They will talk to you. They will talk you through. They will listen to what you have to say and then make assessments and follow up. So nothing is too small. It's important. It's really important. You know, support organizations that are working for victims of human trafficking, like Lifeway Network and the other organizations.
Very good. Well, thank you very, very much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.